I'm going to provide kind of the more boring part is the academic perspective on CBPR, but especially about this caucus and our vision for it. So I'm at the University of North Carolina, but I want to acknowledge the privilege of I've received of being asked to present the academic perspective and the academic partners' perspective on where we're going and how we're going to get there. I'm still trying to figure out why you chose me, because there are so many academic colleagues, and how many of you are out there who are the academic partners for this caucus and CBPR and research and teaching? Alex, get your hand up, and okay, all right, okay, and there are just so many colleagues, and we who have and will continue to make a difference in community-based public health partnerships through research, teaching, and practice. And there are just too many for me to name in these 15 minutes. And so on the Community Health Scholar Program's logo, which is here on the bottom, I picked out a building that I thought looked the most academic. And that's the Ivory Tower, okay. And I inserted a cloud call out for all those academic partners who came before us and inspired us for where we're going and how we're going to get there. So one such academic partner from a long time ago is named John Castle, and he's a South African physician and epidemiologist. His quote here is from a 1976 publication called The Contribution of the Social Environment to Host Resistance. He noted that throughout all of history, that disease, with rare exception, has not been prevented by finding and treating sick individuals, but by modifying those factors in the social environment that facilitates its occurrence. So he said that perhaps the greatest threat to human health may be the presence of other humans. I entered the MPH program in 1976, at the same year that Dr. Castle died. He was chair of our Department of Epidemiology. So this idea is not that new. But we did have to be reminded about this idea in 1988 with the Institute of Medicine's report on the future of public health that ensured us, or that reminded us, that our mission is to train public health professionals to understand and to ensure the conditions for people to be in good health. We had to be reminded once again in 2002 with the Institute of Medicine's report on unequal treatment, confronting racial and ethnic disparities in healthcare. So on the importance and the consistency and the importance of equity in care. So in 2010, we academics have given a new name to this fundamental conditions and resources for good health, and we call them social determinants. And we point to their importance for eliminating racial and ethnic disparities in health. John Castle had been inspired by somebody, by another work of a previous community partner, and this is a picture of John Grant. John Grant here is in a photo in the 1930s with the Peking Union Medical College in China. And there he was to establish community health centers. And his idea was that we should train medical students outside of the hospital. We should take them beyond the walls of the hospital so that a part of their training would be to rotate in communities so that they can see people not just as patients and sick people, but as members of families, members of communities, who are workers, who are teachers. And in order to rotate medical students through communities, then he created community health centers, which are, and this work was supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. So John Castle, who was back in South Africa, communicated with John Grant and Sydney Kark, also in South Africa. The two of them, Kark and Castle, were mandated by the Gluckman Report, and this is before apartheid government came to be in South Africa, to establish a National Health Service Corps. And so they corresponded with John Grant about this notion of creating maybe some community health centers in Africa, in South Africa, so that those medical students would do their rotations through the community health centers. So they created the first rural community health center in the entire continent of Africa in Pilela, which worked with the Zulu community. And then the first urban community health center was in Durban. One of the people that they hired who was not a physician was Guy Stewart. He was a child psychologist. And he was raised in Natal by his parents who were missionaries, and so he was fluent in Zulu. The others, and they would hire Zulu staff, who would assist them in training South African medical students. And they codified this, and they called it community-oriented primary care. So Kark and Castle and Stewart extended their work in community-oriented primary care by including community-based participatory research. They established the South African Institute of Family and Community Health. This, and from 1945 to 1959, they conducted some of the very first empirical studies on the influence of poverty and discrimination on health, introducing social and behavioral science methods and theories to epidemiology. And so came the birth of social epidemiology, and what Kark and Stewart would call A Practice of Social Medicine, which is a book that they published, co-edited, on the work of this institute. In the 1950s, a young medical student from the U.S. named Jack Geiger heard about this work in South Africa, and he spent a year then working, observing the work of Kark and Stewart and Castle. Learned about the work of the institute, and then observed the work of community health centers. In 1959, this institute disbanded with the institution of the apartheid government in South Africa, when it no longer allowed them to work side by side with their colleagues of color. And so they disbanded. John Bennett went to Tanzania, where he established the Flying Doctors Program. The Karks emigrated to Israel, to Hadassah Medical School, where they introduced then community-oriented primary care. And then Castle, Stewart, Dr. Sloan, and Harry Phillips came to the University of North Carolina, which is in the Stroke Belt, and which was where they could continue their work on examining the role of poverty and discrimination on health. And Jack Geiger and Count Gibson at Tufts University then would go on to receive a federal grant to establish the first community health center in the U.S., the rural one in Mound Bayou, Mississippi, and the urban community health center in Boston, at Columbia Point. I think it's Elmer Freeman here. I don't know. He just left. Okay, so he runs one of the, continues some of the work of the Boston Community Health Center. So Hatch, Jack Geiger then hired John Hatch to be the community action coordinator, and he would certainly then come back to UNC and earn his DRPH. So then in 1998, the Kellogg Foundation then latched on to this notion of schools of public health need to do business differently in terms of how we train our students and in how we engage with community health centers and health departments. And so then there was a goal that launched to increase the number of scholars in schools of public health and other academic centers with community health disciplines who possess the capacity to apply the principles of community-based participatory research, understand determinants of community health, and strengthen communities, health agencies, and academic centers to function as equal partners in research, practice, and education. So I put another exclamation point here to represent the foundation. So the foundation and now academia had this great idea in 1998. And so in 1998, the University of Michigan was then awarded the contract to be the National Program Office for accomplishing that goal. And the first training sites were established at Michigan's School of Public Health, the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and the UNC Gilling School of Public Health. In 2006, we added a fourth training site at Morgan State University, which is then our first historically black college and university to join becoming a training site. And I'm over the moon, all of us are over the moon to announce today is that we've added two more training sites, and this is our vision for the future. One is Jackson State University in Mississippi, and the second is the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. So this will provide us with additional racial, ethnic, and tribal and regional diversity among our scholars and among our community partners, as well as linkages and resources to strengthen our CBPR and policy work to achieve health equity. Okay, and how are we going to get there? So given 10 years of experience of increasing the number of academic-based scholars who are committed to CBPR, we're ready to extend our training to increase the number of scholars, and we're now going to add community-based scholars to the academic-based scholars to the program for our training. We also envision that each training site will now be co-directed, so there will be a director who's academic-based and a director who is community-based. We're also we're going to continue that we're the only postdoc training program that requires a community mentors that will continue, and then academic mentors. But what we envision now is that each scholar, community-based and academic-based, will have a policy mentor as well. The training program will then have the three focuses, of course, the one focused on CBPR, community-based participatory research. The one that we're just beginning now, which is on policy advocacy for the last couple of years, which we've been piloting this year by partnering with PolicyLink in Oakland, California. And then we're going to add a special emphasis on equity with undoing systemic determinants of racial and ethnic disparities in terms of keeping up with the notion of policy advocacy. I just want to give you that here is kind of the rationale and preliminary evidence for the potential impact of this next journey. I mean, already we've gotten books that have been published. We have even a journal that is now just committed to this, a report on the quality of community-based participatory research, and certainly with regards to the APHA caucus, the Community Campus Partnerships for Health, and PolicyLink, which I referred to earlier, and then NC Bond, which Ella Green Moten will talk more about in terms of its contributions, and that's why I put exclamation points all over the place now. And I cannot complete it without noting our 52 scholars who have completed the program thus far at our four training sites. And with their community and academic partners, these scholars have co-authored over 180 publications from research conducted alone just from their work as scholars. Now they hold faculty positions in 20 different academic institutions as well as professional organizations, and in four government and private nonprofit health agencies. And in a 2007 survey that we did of our scholars, they reported co-authoring now 343 publications and 721 presentations. And of those in academia, three have been promoted to and gotten tenure, and three have been promoted to full professor. And you've already mentioned Dr. Royster, who has now been moved up to the state level for the state of Virginia. So I'm going to pass this on now to Ella. All right. Thank you.